Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. This is a presentation on Bhagavat Sandarbha. We spoke already on Tattva Sandarbha and Paramatma Sandarbha. So this is actually the third one. And as I explained previously, Sandarbha means a collection of verses. So each Sandarbha has a topic. The topic of this Sandarbha is Bhagavan, as opposed to Paramatma or anything else. And various topics about Bhagavan are raised, and then they are proved by taking verses from Bhagavatam and explaining those verses. So the Sandarbhas are collections of verses arranged according to topic to prove certain points. We have this famous verse in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Vedanti Tattva Vedas Tattvam Yad Jnanam Advayam Brahmeti Paramatmeti Bhagavan Iti Sabhyate. So this is very famous because it outlines the three aspects of the Supreme Lord, which are often discussed in the Gaudiya philosophy, that is Brahman, Parama, and Bhagavan, which are not distinguished in this way in other sampradayas, Vaishnava sampradayas. It's just Bhagavan and Brahman usually. And Brahman they take as a false thing, so it goes back to Bhagavan actually. So here we have three aspects of the Supreme Lord, which are explained in the Sandarbha, and already Paramatma Sandarbha is explained about the Paramatma feature of the Lord. So the translation of this verse is Advaya Jnanam, which means non-dual knowledge, is defined as Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. So within this Sandarbha there is some discussion of Brahman, but mainly it's about Bhagavan. Some Brahman discussion is there. And previously we discussed about the Paramatma feature of the Lord in Paramatma Sandarbha. So what is this Brahman? Because we have three aspects here defined: Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. So there's a very small section here on Brahman. So this Brahman, like Paramatma and Bhagavan, is Advaya Jnanam. It's non-dual, so we cannot really separate Brahman from the Supreme Lord. But nevertheless we distinguish them. We give them three names: Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. So what is this Brahman? So there's a sense of oneness rather than variety caused by the possessor of the Shakti without distinguishable Shaktis. So the possessor of the Shakti is called the Shaktiman, possessing Shaktis, and that refers to Bhagavan or Paramatma. And when that Supreme Lord does not show Shaktis, then it turns into oneness. No variety, no qualities, no form. So that is what Brahman is. So we can say it is Bhagavan without his Shaktis. From our point of view, that's taking it from the point of view of Supreme Lord, and then when he take away his Shakti's hide, then it becomes Brahman. From the Jiva's point of view, when the truth appears in a general way in the consciousness which is unable to grasp variety in the sroop of the Lord, that is, an individual can perceive the Lord or Brahman not with the material senses or eye. It has to be some spiritual substance or Atma. So when the Atma has some perception but no variety at all in that supreme entity, then it is called Brahman. So it's a very general awareness of God that the Atma realizes. with no form, no quality, that is called Brahman. So in this way we have very distinct realizations of the Lord, which becomes also controversial because we have impersonal sampradayas like Shankar Sampradaya, and they say that the Brahman is the ultimate. And then we have other persons, the Vaishnavas, say, no, there's a Supreme Lord, Krishna or Vishnu. Yet we say they're both aspects of the Lord. It's not that Brahman is false or Bhagavan is false. They're both true. They both exist. And they're both Advaita Jnanam. They're both part of the Lord. So we know in no way negate the Brahman. However, the distinction is Lord with Shaktis, Lord without his Shaktis. So we can say, well, which is superior? And so some people prefer the Brahman, devoid of Shaktis. Others prefer Lord manifesting his Shaktis, and then it becomes Bhagavan. So it depends on the preference of the individual jiva, what aspect of the Lord he prefers. So, Bhagavan is a manifestation of the Lord with his Shaktis, and how does the jiva or the atma realize that Lord? It's through bhakti. We cannot obviously use our material eyes or material senses. We have to use the process of bhakti. And where is that bhakti? That resides in the atma. But what is the bhakti made out of? It's made out of Hladini and Samvit Shaktis, which are actually the Lord Shaktis. So if the jiva doesn't get those Shaktis, he cannot perceive the Lord. He will not realize Bhagavan with his Shaktis. So we can say in another way, the Lord is perceived when the jiva gets an endowment of the Lord Shaktis, then he's able to perceive the Lord with Shaktis. Okay, so, and when we do that, then our senses are able to see the Lord, but these are actually not material senses, these are spiritual senses. So what does Samvit mean? Samvit means, this is the internal Shakti of the Lord, the internal energy, Antaranga Shakti of the Lord. And Samvit means knowledge. So this is the energy of the Lord that causes awareness of things, consciousness of things, awareness. So it's very essential for the jiva, if he wants to perceive the Lord, he would have to have this Samvit, spiritual awareness. If he doesn't have that, he can't perceive the Lord. He'll perceive Brahman, but not the Lord. So he needs that Samvit Shakti, which is there in the spiritual world to cause all the different awarenesses and relationships and rasas, etc. Hladini Shakti is the bliss Shakti. So this is the Shakti which, we can say, enlivens experience. The jiva by nature, like the Lord, as an experiencer. He experiences things, he feels things. So the positive aspect of this is bliss, Hladini. So without the Hladini Shakti, the jiva won't feel anything. We cannot feel Ananda unless we have some Shakti, the Hladini Shakti. It is through the Hladini Shakti that the Lord experiences bliss also. And of course, that the Hladini Shakti expands into Radharani. And then when the Lord has rasa with Radharani, then he experiences bliss. So these are the elements of bhakti, which will give a perception of the Lord and also a bliss in relation to perceiving the Lord. So these are part of bhakti itself, and that bhakti is expressed by the jiva. So how do we become aware of Brahman? The normal process is jnana. Jnana means knowledge. We destroy ignorance or avidya, and when we do that, we end up with awareness of Brahman. So in other words, there's no shakti involved. Here we have the bhakti with ladini and some of it shakti involved, and then we get spiritual senses to perceive a lord. Here, jnana means we destroy karma, we destroy ignorance, ahankara, material identification of the jiva. So the jiva gets uncovered, and what's left? Jiva. And he has an awareness of Brahman. That's it. Some vague aspect of spiritual existence. So the two perceptions are quite different, and the process to realize the Lord or Brahman are quite different also. One requires bhakti, the other requires jnana. So we have Bhagavan, Paramatma, and Brahman. What does Bhagavan mean? Why we have to use that word? Of course, we use that because Krishnastu Bhagavan Swayam is there in the, as one, the verse in the Bhagavatam is the main verse. So, who is this Bhagavan? So there's different ways of analyzing the meaning of Bhagavan. One way is to take the syllables ba, ga, and va, which is common, like diksha, divyaganam, and kshaya, a destruction of sin, or mamsa, me, mam, and sahi. So here we have ba, ga, va. Ba stands for the maintainer, the one who supports the jiva. Ga stands for gamayata, one who gives things. He gives prema. He manifests the qualities in the jiva, the spiritual qualities in the jiva. He gets the jiva to go to the spiritual world. That's ga. And va stands for vas, which means to live. So the Lord in whom all beings dwell, and who dwells in all beings. The Lord dwells in all beings, and all the beings are in Him. Which means that when we say everything is in the Lord, it means the Lord is thinking of the jiva. And when He dwells in the jiva, it means the jiva is thinking of the Lord. So these three words show a relationship between Supreme Lord and the jiva. So He supports the jiva, He bestows prema to the jiva, He takes him to the spiritual world, and He's always thinking of the jiva. So this is the meaning of Bhagavan. What does Brahman do? Brahman has no activities, has no qualities, has no feelings. So these don't exist in Brahman. What about Paramatma, who has got a form also? His main function is creating the material world, witnessing the material world, helping the jiva fulfill his desires in the material world. So it's not for the devotee, it's for the jivas stuck in the material world. So Bhagavan is the Lord who interacts with the devotees. Another meaning of Bhagavan is Bhaga and Van. Van means possessor, like Shaktiman. Man also means possessor. So Shaktiman means possessor of Shakti. Bhagavan means possessor of Bhaga. And what is Bhaga? That means good qualities. So it means the person who possesses good qualities. So we have six qualities famously listed in the Vishnu Purana. Aishvarya, Virya, Yasa, Shri, Jnana, and Vairagya. Aishvarya means controls everything. It's the same as the root is Ish, and from that we get Ishvara. It means the controller of every, supreme controller, supreme Lord. So Aishvarya means the same thing, controls everything ultimately. Though he may do so through his sub-controllers like the Devatas, and Brahma, etc. Virya stands for, it means strength or courage and many things. It means influence also. He's able to accomplish things by his willpower. Yasa means fame, literally. So it refers to all good qualities. The Lord is famous because he has all wonderful qualities. Shri means wealth and also beauty. Jnana means knowledge. Vairagya means detachment or renunciation. But in this context, it means ultimately he is completely untouched by the material world, even though he appears in the material world in many forms, not at all influenced by it. Yeah? So these are this is the other meaning of Bhagavan. That's the verse here is actually one of the verses. Is this a less famous verse? There's another verse which we often quote, but they're both from the Vishnu Purana. Jnana Shakti Bala Aishwarya Virya Tejamsi Asesha Taha Bhagavat Shabda Vachani Avinaheyar Gunadibi. The word Bhagavan means he is complete with power of mind, power of senses, power of body, control, influence, and beauty, and is devoid of all inferior qualities. So this is obviously very different from Brahman with no qualities at all. Possesses all good qualities. So as I mentioned, Paramatma has got a form like Bhagavan, unlike Brahman. So we can say he's a form of Bhagavan who is the monitor of the jivas in the material world. So we don't need a Paramatma in the spiritual world. The jivas don't have to be monitored there because they've got prema and they have their relationship with the Lord. Jivas in the material world are full of ignorance. And so the Lord acts as the witness and the monitor of all the jivas in the material world as internal antaryami, that is expansion of Kshiradakshai Vishnu, as Garbhadakshai Vishnu, who is the witness for the whole of one universe, and as Mahavishnu, Karanadakshai Vishnu, who is the witness of all the universes put together, in which we have all these conditioned jivas. So Paramatma is the monitor for all the jivas in the material world. He's the cause of creation, maintenance, and destruction through his form as Paramatma, who stimulates Prakriti and the jiva into different conditions. So previously we discussed how Mahavishnu glances over Prakriti, which is inert and has no distinctions in it, no gunas are manifest. It's invisible completely, avyakta. And when he glances, he injects the jivas into the material energy. And then Prakriti begins to change and it manifests Mahatattva with the jiva in it, and it becomes a visible entity, glowing like a big egg, a golden egg. And then finally, the elements start manifesting. After Mahatattva, we get Ahankara, and from that we get the material elements and the senses and the sense objects, etc. And then they join together and make universes. And then within the universe, the jivas are all put, and they get bodies made by Brahma. So the Lord is ultimately the creator of everything. And then he's in there as the maintainer. He is the Sattvagun avatar, who stays as the maintainer there. And then at destruction, of course we know that Shiva is also involved in destruction, but ultimately, by the will of the Lord, Mahavishnu, everything starts disintegrating. It goes into finer and finer matter until it's only Prakriti, and jivas merge into Mahavishnu again. So all of this is taking creation, maintenance, and destruction all under these Paramatma forms of the Lord. And then we have Brahman. So Brahman has none of these qualities. It doesn't, none of these actions. It's not like Paramatma, who's in charge of creation and destruction, monitoring the jiva. Brahman has no real function at all, and no qualities, no form. So what is it? So one definition is chin matra. Chin means chit. Matra means only consciousness. It's consciousness without an object of consciousness. There's only oneness. There's no difference anywhere. It's just consciousness. with no qualities at all manifested, no action at all, no feeling at all. That's Brahman. Because of this strange definition, we say, well, what is that pure consciousness? So many of our other acharyas attack it. Say, this doesn't really exist because consciousness means you're conscious of something. If you're not conscious of something, it doesn't mean anything. It's useless. So they reject this idea of Brahman that is presented by Shankaracharya as being meaningless, actually. We accept it, but our definition is that it's the Lord minus his Shaktis. And if we realize the Lord without his Shaktis through Jnana, that's what we get. A feeling of consciousness, but no real object. So some people also attack the Gaudiya Sampradaya. Oh, you talk about distinction of Bhagavan, Paramatma, and Brahman, but you know, you take one verse for the first canto of Bhagavatam, which I quoted already, and then you make a whole philosophy out of one little verse from the Bhagavatam. But it's not so, because in other parts of the Bhagavatam, we'll see the same concept is there, Paramatma, Bhagavan, and Brahman, as we see here in the 10th canto in the 28th chapter. So we have the three things mentioned again. And we'll find other places as well where the three aspects of the Lord are presented, Bhagavan, Paramatma, Bhagavan. I offer my obeisance unto Bhagavan, Paramatma, and Brahman, within whom there's no trace of illusory energy and which orchestrates the creation of this world. So it's not just in one verse, it's many verses of similar nature. Even if we look closely in the Bhagavad Gita, we'll see these three concepts presented. In some places we get the present, like in the 5th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, the impersonal aspect of the Lord, Brahman. And then we got the Lord who is the creator of the material world, everything comes from me, everything merges into me at destruction, etc. This is Paramatma. And then we have the personal form of the Lord with his devotees in the spiritual world. So we get the three concepts again. And if you look at the 18th chapter, then when Krishna is summarizing everything, first he talks a little bit about Brahman, then he talks about Paramatma, and then he talks about Bhagavan and Bhakti. So again, in Bhagavad Gita, we got analysis of these three aspects of God. So, one can realize Brahman by realizing one's nature as pure Atma. So often Atma-jnana and Brahman realization go together. So we talk about self-realization, but we have to be careful of that. It has an impersonal connotation, because if we just get to self-realization, Atma-jnana, we enter into Brahman, if we stop there. Yeah. So we realize Atma, and then we identify that with Brahman. By having a similar conscious form, the Atma has oneness with Brahman. So we realize Atma is, you know, non-material, eternal, no particular form, etc. And then we identify that with Brahman. Though after realizing Atma, there's no Shakti to accomplish the oneness with Brahman, by the power of the Lord who was previously worshipped with bhakti, which gives life to actions for the realization, this is accomplished. So, in one sense, you cannot merge into Brahman on your own. You need the mercy of the Lord. But, to get the mercy of the Lord at that stage, when you realize Atma and you want to merge in Brahman, then, to get that mercy, you would have to have worshipped the Lord previously. So you have to have a little bit of bhakti. If you don't have a little bit of bhakti, you won't get the merging. You'll stay in the material world and then come back with a material body again. So this is stated emphatically by our acharyas, that if you don't have any bhakti, you can't even get liberation, mukti, impersonal liberation. You need the mercy of the Lord even to get that merging of Atma into Brahman. So a little bhakti is necessary. So, if one offends the Lord by saying, the Lord has no form, no qualities, no activities, he's made out of material gunas or whatever, then no chance of getting mukti. Yeah? So a real impersonalist who wants to get mukti, he will also have to respect the Lord and worship Him a little bit in his sadhana. Please, Lord, I worship You. Let me merge in Brahman. Then the Lord will fulfill that desire and he can get mukti. If he insults the Lord, then no mukti. A seriously inquisitive student or sage, well equipped with knowledge and detachment, realizes that absolute truth, Brahman, by rendering devotional service after hearing from Guru. So we got pasyati atmani atmanam, seeing the self in the self by bhakti. So here we have merging into the Brahman of the jiva by bhakti. So it's not obviously not the same as the bhakti that we do. So it's just a little bit of bhakti, and the main thing is jnana. With a little bhakti, then they can merge into Supreme Lord in his Brahman aspect. So what's the main characteristic or srup lakshana of Brahman? It's essential characteristic. Awareness alone. No subject, no object. It's not that I see something, I'm aware of anything. It's just awareness. Another way of saying it, it's the opposite of material sorrow and insentience, ignorance. It's just the opposite of the bad experience of the material world. It's a negation of material experience, in other words. It's eternal. It is the Atma who is the basis of all Atmas. So these are the kind of the characteristics that one gets in that realization. Consciousness, eternal nature, opposite of matter, and Atma is the basis of all Atmas. So if we realize Bhagavan, automatically whatever is in Brahman is also included in Bhagavan. Because Bhagavan is the main entity, and he has all shaktis, etc. So we can realize Brahman within Bhagavan, but we generally don't want to realize that because it's not favorable for bhakti. So Jiva Goswami doesn't dedicate a whole sandarbha to this Brahman, but he just mentions it here within the bhakti sandarbha. So even for jnana and merging in Brahman with mukti, we need a little bhakti. But if we want to realize Bhagavan, no jnana, it is all bhakti. This is actually mentioned in the first chapter, first canto of Bhagavatam. In that mind which was undisturbed because it was pure from performance of bhakti, this is Vyasadeva. Vyasadeva saw Lord Krishna complete with all his energies and spiritual expansions, and also saw Maya, who took shelter behind the Lord. So this is talking about the samadhi of Vyasadeva. So he realized the Lord by bhakti, bhakti yogena. So we've talked about Bhagavan, and he has all wonderful qualities. So many people say, well, qualities are material. So how can the Lord have material qualities? So the idea is these are qualities that look like material qualities, but actually they are beyond the gunas. They're visuddha sattva qualities. So they may have similarity with things in the material world, but they're not. So just like we have the deities, and then people will criticize, that's the material, it's material. Material flowers, material cloth, material stone, and then you make it into an image. Why? How you can worship that as God? But actually, the Lord is non-material. So that form actually is not regular stone, not regular cloth or flower or whatever. It changes its nature by bhakti. Of course, we also say that all the qualities and forms of the material world are actually just a reflection, a perverted reflection of the spiritual qualities and form. So there is some resemblance. So if we appreciate some quality in this material world, its ideal form is in the spiritual world, in the Supreme Lord. Okay, as we have gunas in the material world, the gunas, the sattva, rajas, tamas mix together, and they create all sorts of variety. Okay? So we get all sorts of forms, trees and animals and rocks and whatever, all sorts of forms, is because of gunas. Yeah? And of course we get all sorts of qualities within these different entities because of gunas. So the gunas create all sorts of variety within the material world. So similarly, in the spiritual world, Visuddha Sattva creates all these different varieties in the spiritual world, qualities, etc., qualities, actions, etc. But the gunas of the material world, of course, emanate from Prakriti, which is inert, dull matter. Visuddha Sattva is part of the Supreme Lord, spiritual, Sarup Shakti of the Lord, completely independent of matter. So the qualities look similar, but they're actually, the origin is different, and the result is different. So the Lord has his Sarup Shakti, or his internal energy, Antaranga Shakti. Through that, everything happens. We say that the Lord without his Shaktis is Brahman, no form, no quality, no activity. So his form manifests through his internal energy. Yeah. The Sarup Shakti also manifests his qualities. We saw that the Bhagavan was, he is full of all wonderful qualities, and a Bhagavan, possessor of Bhaga, all wonderful qualities. So the qualities are manifested through Sarup Shakti. Yeah. So, the idea of Lord with his Shaktis is very essential to manifest his form and his qualities. So we put a great emphasis on that Sarup Shakti, or the internal energy of the Lord. Here's the material variety. We have Maya Shakti, and then we get matter, Prakriti, etc., and we get bodies, and we get gunas, and we get all sorts of qualities. But this is all from Maya. This is from Supreme Lord, and through that his Sarup Shakti manifests these different things. And so similarities there, but it's also different. Okay, so we have Bhagavan, Paramatma, Brahman. They're all real. We accept Brahman as real, Paramatma as real, and Bhagavan is real. So Bhagavan and Paramatma is Lord with form and qualities. It is real. It is not illusion. So the Mayavadis say, form of the Lord is illusory. Qualities of the Lord are illusory. Ultimately, impersonal Brahman, that's the reality. So we say, no, Lord Bhagavan is real with qualities and form. He is the object of knowledge. In other words, the jiva can realize, the jiva by nature is a knower. In the Brahman state, there is no knower. He's just consciousness of nothing, chinmatra, consciousness alone. But the real jiva functions when he has an object of knowledge. So we get knowledge in the material world. This is useless for us because it's not as material. It's not like the jiva. And the other object is Supreme Lord. So that's a spiritual. The jiva is spiritual, he realizes a spiritual object, the Supreme Lord. So the Lord is the object of the jiva's knowledge. And the Lord is full of all wonderful qualities. His highest quality is bliss. And he uproots material miseries. So this actually is presented in the first verse of the Bhagavatam, Vedyam Vastavam Atra Vastu Shivadam Tapa Trayonvalonam. Oh, sorry, second verse. So, a very, very concise definition of the Supreme Lord. So, we have a problem in the Shrutis, on the Upanishads, because some Upanishads say, oh, the highest entity is Brahman with no form and no qualities. How do we deal with those things? We're saying the opposite. And there are so many statements. Astulam ananu. He has no form, astulam, and is not a small particle, ananu. Anu means small, so ananu means the opposite. He's not small, he's very big. He has no form, astulam. This is from the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, which is one of the main Upanishads. So we get the contrary statement. Lord has no form. But then if we look carefully, other Shrutis say, the Lord does have form. So this is from Mundaka Upanishad. The knower of Atma knows the splendorous pure Lord without parts who resides in a golden realm. So he knows, the Jiva knows the Lord who resides in the golden realm. So he's a particular form in a particular place. So, and this is also one of the main Upanishads, which is accepted by Shankaracharya. So there are contrary statements within the Upanishads itself. Lord has form, the Lord has no form. So we said that Bhagavan is possessor of all good qualities, and his qualities and his form manifest through his shaktis. So the idea of the Lord having shakti or being shaktiman is very important for our particular philosophy. And we find many statements that support this idea of the Lord with shakti. For instance, in this verse from Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th canto, I offer respects to you who possess great but mutually contrary energies. It's seen in the first verse here. Shakti Bir. So, these Shaktis are inconceivable. We talk about the Lord with the Shaktis, and we analyze them like we say Chit Shakti, and or the internal energy, or Sarup Shakti, talk about Jiva Shakti, or Tatastha Shakti, or we talk about Maya Shakti, Bahiranga Shakti, and we explain them, but ultimately they are inconceivable. We cannot analyze them completely with material logic. They have mysterious powers within them. So that is stated in the third canto of Bhagavatam. You're possessed of unlimited, inconceivable energies, and this way you carry out your activities. So inconceivable here is Atarkya. Atarkya Sahasra Shakti. Thousands of inconceivable Shaktis belong to the Supreme Lord, not just one. We call Achincha Beda Beda Tattva, the Lord with inconceivable powers, but actually many, many inconceivable powers. So, of course, we define them for our material mind or fallen mind. We categorize his shakti. So we call one the Bahiranga Shakti, external energy, Tatastha Shakti, the marginal energy, and Antaranga Shakti, the internal energy or Sarup Shakti. And then within that Antaranga Shakti, we also again start categorizing. We have Sandini Shakti, we have Samvit Shakti, and we have Hladini Shakti. So the Hladini and Samvit come together and they form Bhakti Shakti also. And Sandini Shakti is what causes the manifestation of everything in the spiritual world. So it's also important. The Dham is caused by the Sandini Shakti. The form, qualities, name of the Lord manifest by Sandini Shakti. as various marvelous creations arise from desire trees or chintamani, according to authorities, so we can believe from scripture that various creations arise from the Lord. So how are they created? The Lord is spiritual, we got material energy here, we got jivas. The Lord is perfect, He's one. How come there's many? And some of these things are grossly material and different from the Lord. How does it happen? Why? Because it's inconceivable. Shakti of the Lord is inconceivable. So the example is given here that we have a desire tree. We haven't seen a desire tree, but they apparently exist according to authorities. And from a desire tree, you can get anything. Or a chintamani. You have a chintamani jewel, and you have a wish, it manifests. Something manifests. How does it do it? How does the chintamani manifest something? We can't explain it. So it's called achintya. How does the Lord create the spiritual world, material world? It's all achintya. But He does it. How does He do it? He says, through His power, His shakti. So the shaktis are inconceivable in what they can do, how they can manifest the whole spiritual world, whatever. So we can attempt to explain things, but we can never come up with a perfect explanation, because words are, and our concepts are all limited by material logic and material concepts. So we can't get a perfect explanation. So somewhat inconceivable. So there's one supreme tattva, that is this Bhagavan, which is present in all times by His natural inconceivable shakti in four forms: the Lord, His powers, the jiva, and pradhan, that's matter. It is like the sun, which has internal heat and produces rays externally as its secondary form. And so we have the Lord, then He manifests His form, spiritual world, and everything through His internal energy, jiva, through His tadasya shakti, and matter through His bahiranga shakti, external energy. Just as light of a fire situated in one place spreads its illumination, the shakti of the Supreme Brahman spreads out as the whole universe. So it's simply by His shakti, the Lord can manifest the universe. So we have many statements of oneness in the Upanishads, like Sarvam Kalvidam Brahma. So this is the basis of Shankara's philosophy. There's only Brahman, everything else is illusion. One entity, Advaita. But we can see that within the same scriptures we find discussion of many things, not just one. So yes, the Lord is everything, but He's also different from everything. So He has, the Lord is one, and He has all those different shaktis. They're one with Him, but they're also different. So the oneness and difference relationship is achintya. So the Lord is one, and He's also many. How? Because of achintya shakti. So by the antaranga shakti, or sarup shakti, that's the internal energy, the Lord's complete sarup, as well as His powers, such as Vaikuntha, manifest. That's internal energy. The tatasya shakti manifests as individual pure jivas, like rays of the sun. Tatasya shakti means jivas. Bahiranga shakti or maya shakti manifests as pradhan, matter, with insentient external objects. So these are all coming through shakti of the Lord. Ultimately, they're all inconceivable how they relate to the Lord. The Lord has His shaktis, the Sarup Shakti, and Tatasya Shakti, and Maya Shakti. And from this, we get whole spiritual world, and then material world, and the jivas. So in our philosophy, we talk about Beda Abed, difference and non-difference, oneness and many. Other philosophies may talk about oneness or difference, like Dvaita is purely difference. Ramanuja is oneness with a little difference. And we say different and non-different. Though the Lord Sarup, His spiritual manifestation, the Jivas and matter manifested from Antaranga Tadashi and Bahiranga Shaktis are one with the Lord and are also non-different from the Lord, they're not equal in all respects. So there is difference and non-difference, but generally put more emphasis upon the difference. So ultimately everything is one with the Lord, and therefore Sarvam Kalvidam Brahma is true. Only the Lord exists. But then we also say the Lord has Shaktis, Sudha Shaktis, then He creates material world, He has the Jivas there, He has spiritual world, etc. So everything is there, it's all within the Lord, but we have this differentiation there. So we have the Bahiranga Shakti, the external energy of the Lord. It has two aspects to it, Gunamaya and Jivamaya. What is a Gunamaya? This refers to Prakriti, which is eternal. It is never destroyed, but it's unconscious. Dependent, like a reflection of the sun. In other words, we can't have a reflection unless we have the sun. So Prakriti is dependent on the Lord. It belongs to the inconceivable Lord, who is the cause of the universe. Though unconscious, by combining with consciousness of Paramatma, Prakriti, like a dramatic player, has produced a temporary universe. So Prakriti can do nothing on its own, but because of Mahavishnu and Garbhadaksha Vishnu and Kshiradaksha Vishnu, then it manifests into 14 worlds, bodies for living entities, etc. So it's because of Paramatma feature of the Lord with Prakriti. And so that's the Gunamaya aspect. This is a quote from Vishnu Purana. Just as the light of a fire situated in one place spreads its illumination, the Shakti of the Supreme Brahman spreads out as the whole universe. So that's, of course, the external energy of the Lord spreading out, Bahiranga Shakti. So it's also like the light from the fire. So we have Bhagavan, then he expands to Paramatma, and through the Paramatma, relating to Prakriti, there's Mahavishnu, etc., then we get universe. So that's the Gunamaya aspect, Prakriti. Then we have the Jivamaya aspect of the Prakriti. This consists of time, karma, Swabhav, which means the ability to change. Matter has the ability to change itself from one thing into another. And action. These are aspects of Maya, but they're not substance like Prakriti. And out of this we get two functions of Maya, Vidya and Avidya, knowledge and ignorance. So these also arise through Maya. First, Brahma created ignorance of five types by Jivamaya. Tamas, Moha, Mahatamas, Tamisram, and Andatamisra. This is mentioned in the third canto of Bhagavatam. So we have all these types of ignorance created by Brahma. So that's the Avidya aspect there. Should go on to that. Maybe I should end there. Okay, no. Okay, any question there?
Talk about the creation, like First of all, there's Narayan Vaikuntha, so where does Narayan Vaikuntha stand? Secondly, what about his expansion? Mahavishnu is the sort of creator of this Brahman and then coming inside the universe and lying in the ocean and milk with this fantastic conversation and coming within the heart of spirit souls. Surely it's sort of like you would sort of lead you to think that that is an expansion of the Supreme Person being.
Yeah, not Brahman. Yeah. So your question is how they conclude Brahman?
Yeah. How can they disregard
all the other things? Yeah. So that is why the Vaishnavas attack Shankar's interpretation of the Upanishads. He draws out certain statements to favor his theory. Of course, we can also ask, well, why does he have this strange theory which ignores half of the scripture? And the answer to that is he is presenting Buddhism in a Vedic context. Instead of saying nothingness, he says oneness. And like nothingness, there is no quality, no form, no activity, etc. But we call it oneness, and that's Brahman. So it's called covered Buddhism. So why would he do that? Simply to get the Buddhists back into Vedic, following the Vedas, even if it's the wrong interpretation of the Vedas. So that's the esoteric reason for that. Then to do that, to argue in this way, he has to misinterpret the Vedas so that he ignores certain things there. Just like with the, what about Bhagavad Gita? So that's it. All this is secondary because Shrutis are primary, Smriti is secondary. If there's a contradiction in Bhagavad Gita, ignore it. Doesn't mean anything. It's stronger. And then that second thing is if we have the contrary statements within the Shrutis itself. So we see Mahanarayan Upanishad is all about Narayan as being first, etc. And even Taittiriya Upanishad, the Lord glanced and then he created the material world. And the Aitreya Upanishad is one of the Upanishads that Shankaracharya wrote a commentary on. So how does he get around all of this? So let's say all of this is secondary. Exaggeration, we call it interpretation. So it doesn't actually mean that. It's not absolute. And a lot of these descriptions are there just to help people who have lower types of minds. He'll explain it in that way. So that's why Lord Chaitanya says, we take the Abhida, the direct meaning, as much as possible. So it says Narayan created the material. We accept it. We don't try to say, oh, that means something else. And then Prabhupada, of course, says this is word jugglery. We take the statement and we can simply explain it away by some logical process or whatever argument. We can dismiss it. But as much as possible, we try to take the direct meaning and we minimize the interpretation of words, sentences, and paragraphs, etc. Since Paramatma and Bhagavan can't be really separated, but Paramatma is the function for monitoring the jivas in Maya. And there's no Maya in the spiritual world, so it's only Bhagavan. And he doesn't really have to monitor anybody because they all got prema, so.
And you spoke about the Sandini energy and that kind of, is that connected to Tulsi Day? Because it seems the way you explained it, it seemed like they have similar roles.
Tulsi Devi.
Yes.
Oh, well, Tulsi Devi is more like bhakti, devotee of the Lord, serving the Lord.
Maybe I'm wrong. I thought that Tulsi Devi, like one of her roles in the spiritual world, she kind of furnishes the spiritual world.
Like Vrinda Devi, she arranges for the pastimes of the Radha and Krishna. She decorates all the kunjas and the bowers and things like this. So that's her role. She's like an arranger of things. So Sandini Shakti is the Shakti which makes things real, more or less. It's like the Dham. We can't have pastimes unless there's somewhere. So the somewhere is the place. So the Dham is the manifestation of Sandini Shakti. And we can say the Sandini Shakti is a Sat aspect of the Lord. Sat means existence. So it manifests the existence of everything necessary for the Lord and His pastimes, including His form, qualities, and activities, etc. So it's the existence factor that supports everything.
So what's the difference? It seems like it's also for the deity's role as well. She's also...
Well, she's arranging things within. Once everything exists, she's arranging things there for the pastimes. So she doesn't manifest the bowers and stuff like that. She takes the bowers and starts decorating them with different things and arranging for, you know, elements for so that Radha and Krishna can have greater bliss.
And I don't quite understand the purpose of like matter, like in Prakriti, why that would be eternal. It seems like the other things that are eternal seem to fit nicely with the whole spiritual plan of things. And Prakriti, which is kind of like this, almost like it seems like a thorn.
Uh-huh. Well, I think because the Lord has Shaktis and the Shaktis are eternal. So then Prakriti is a manifestation of that Shakti. So then, in that sense, it's eternal. But then the forms that are manifested are temporary. So it has two aspects, temporary and permanent. The temporary aspect is everything that comes after Prakriti, that is Mahatattva and all these things, and material world, forms in the material world, etc., all manifest and unmanifested, but Prakriti remains like that. So because a Shakti of the Lord should be eternal.
So what would you say the ultimate purpose and role of Prakriti is?
So that jivas can get a sense of their own enjoyment and their own identity, separate from the Lord. They can maintain an existence of happiness through ignorance. And simultaneously to get out of it. So the Lord makes a little bit, because we had vidya and avidya there. There was knowledge plus ignorance as manifestations of Prakriti. Yeah. So the vidya part is a little trap hole, or a little hole by which the jiva can get out of ignorance also, out of the material world. So Maya has two functions. Bewildering the living entity and helping them get out.
Maybe this is a never-ending line of questions, but and how does that process serve the Lord?
Oh, because, what, getting out?
Yeah, why making us enjoy independently and have to figure out how to enjoy back in the relationship?
Oh, well, why the jivas want to enjoy is because they have independence. Once they got that independence and want to enjoy, then the Lord has to satisfy them somehow in their separate identity, so therefore He makes a material world so they can get something, but He doesn't give them perfect happiness there in their illusion. He makes an arrangement so that eventually they can get out of the illusion. So we have gunas there, and when you get to sattva gun, then you can realize I'm not the body, I'm the atma, and then we get to vidya. Yeah? But then He comes as avatar, and He explains things, gives teachings like Vyasadeva, and there's devotees there. He gives the processes of karma, jnana, and yoga, and bhakti. And so for different types of people, He educates them so that eventually they can take to bhakti, get out of the material world, develop a spiritual body, and then enjoy ananda eternally with the Lord. So that the material world acts as an opportunity for the bound jiva or conditioned jiva to get the highest bliss also.
And while this is taking place, the soul is eternally liberated, right? So in a sense, we never fall into the spiritual world. Like we're marginal energy, so we still kind of have one foot in, one foot out.
Well, we have possibility of both. But as far as from our point of view now, in our limited range of philosophy or whatever, we distinguish there are nitya-siddha jivas and there are bound jivas, buddha jivas. So we don't say the buddha jivas are actually liberated. We say we make a distinction. We are liberated in buddha. But the buddha jiva, the bound jiva, can get out of that position and enter into the spiritual world.